Your daily TFMR podcast is brought to you by JMBullion.com, your number one most trusted online bullion dealer. Well, happy Wednesday morning to everyone at TFMR. It is now Wednesday of Turd's little sabbatical, and it's time for your Wednesday conversation. And today we have a return of an old friend, a TFMR favorite. And who else could we be talking about other than our buddy Ned Naylor Leyland? Many of you are familiar with Ned. If you're not, his current job is as the fund manager of the Marion Gold and Silver Fund based in London. And he is definitely a tireless advocate for our cause. And like I said, of all the things that I've been able to, accomplish in 10 years running the site, one of them is to make friends around the world, and I'm happy to consider Ned a friend. So, Ned, thank you so much for spending some time.
Not at all, and you're most definitely my friend. And I'm still hanging on for Turdapalooza, or however I'm supposed to pronounce that in American. It probably wasn't like that. Two pieces of housekeeping. First is, if you hear screaming children in the background, that's my son playing Fortnite, which is an embarrassing admission, and you may hear it through the wall, so I apologize for that. And the second piece of housekeeping, which came to me as you were just speaking there, is, which may amuse some of the people on the site, is I suppose I spent, 10, 15 years looking like being dragged through a hedge backwards, going on TV and all this sort of stuff. And then I got all polished and went into the industry on a serious institutional level and cut my hair. However, unfortunately, thanks to the joys of lockdown, I am back with hair all over the place, looking like a mess.
Shaggy.
So that might visually be amusing for a few people on TFMR.
Dragged through the hedge backward. I like it. You always give me good one. I'm gonna keep that one. I like that. It's a great way to describe. I actually got a haircut last week for the first time in 9 weeks, and the pile that I had cut off looked like it could be suitable for wig making. So anyway, I'm sure you're that day. But, you know, we're all under lockdown. We're all dealing with whatever. And I don't hear any Fortnite screams in the background. So I guess we can just dive right in.
You can, yes.
All right. So this is today is Wednesday, the 3rd of June. But we are, for everyone knows, I mean, obviously, we're recording this ahead of time. It's actually Thursday, May the 28th. Ned, I want to start with something I'll put as a link on this page, even though by the time people hear us discuss it, it's somewhat old news. And it's a Reuters story that was published this morning, and it says, exclusive, bullion banks prepare CME pullback after virus snarl. And that kind of goes into the idea that the banks are, I mean, there's so many got hung out to dry back on the 23rd and 24th of March. And we know Scotiabank is getting out of the business and posted big losses, as did HSBC, and because of what happened back then. Andy, our friend, our mutual friend Andrew McGuire, told us about a month ago that the LME would soon be offering a competing futures contract to compete with CME, COMEX, and LBMA, and it would be set up by Goldman Sachs and ICTBC, and it. This article makes us think maybe it's headed that way. But Ned, where I want to start with you is just your opinion from your side of the Atlantic, having watched what happened, you know, the kind of lockup of physical metal, this massive spread that opened between spot and futures, the total dry up of this EFP shenanigans that were taking place. You know, we were told that it was, oh, you know, it's just the gold's there. It's just in the wrong place, you know, and the planes aren't flying. Oh, no problem. It's just logistics. Let me just leave it there. What are your feelings here 2 months hence about what has taken place and what is still taking place?
So I think over the course of the years we've discussed the subject, my views have become more tempered, sort of steady, I suppose, on the subject. Look, I think that all the observations people made over the years are true. I mean, the whole thing is very similar to the Gomorrah or the whatever mafia family who come out and sort of say this is outrageous. You're suggesting there's criminal behavior in the Naples, you know, district. Right. Right. It's sort of, I mean, the whole thing is just completely farcical. But this is also why I always bang on about real rates, Craig. It's because ultimately, we know all of that, and that's all true, and it's all going on, and all this is interesting, and I'll certainly answer the question specifically. But I think that there is only so much we can influence the timing of the collapse of the Mafia family. You know, it's got its own life cycle behind the door that we can't observe. There's clearly a problem. I think actually probably the most interesting thing I saw pertaining to that situation was what I think it was probably Ronan who identified the usage of the Bank of England reserves within right. GLD.
Right.
You know, that's the individual point of interest that sort of tells you, because, you know, so we can't move gold out of London. There's lots of gold in London. Can't move gold out of London. Can't move it at all. Can't do anything like that. But yet they're adding whatever it was. You know, was it? Is it 1,000 tons? How much has GLD added? I can't even remember. Yeah, it's something quite incredible.
About 1,100 allegedly now.
Okay, so I wasn't completely miles away. I suddenly thought I was miles away there, but I wasn't that far off. You know, but you can't move it, but they have. And all the subcustodians are good, as in we shouldn't be questioning them. Or the subcustodians of the subcustodians, which are also allowed. And there's nothing to see here, move along. So really the whole thing, from my perspective, I've become a lot less interested in trying to understand the specifics of what they're doing, because the whole point is that you can't. You know, they have 4 or 5 different funnels that they can play with, all of which are outside of any scrutiny. And what would you end up doing is sort of, you know, you're getting conned by street magician over and over and over and over and over again as you try and go, it's under that one, you know. And I've sort of stopped trying to do this, because I think that the more you understand about this subject, the more you realize there are individual opportunity sets to either insure in the case of physical metal, or invest in the case of miners, particularly if we talk about those, and there are two dynamics in play as to the outcome. One is the real rates keep going lower, gold and silver keep going up, and everything remains broadly under control, which has to be your standing expectation. And then all the rest of it just comes through the floodgates in due course when the emperor is visibly naked. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's visibly naked. He's visibly naked to me and you anyway, and everybody on the site. But, you know, we're still waiting for that outcome. And it's as likely to be in 6 weeks as it is in 6 months. It certainly looks like there's a problem. I can't speak sensibly to the backwardation and then contango. You know, this is something I've looked at, read about, written about, you know, for 10, 15 years, and I still don't think I understand it properly. And the reason why is because we don't get data. The data's all made up. So, you know, you're never going to understand it. So I suppose there's a degree to which I'm sort of rather exasperated by the whole thing and sort of standing back and going, well, we know where we're going on the basis of real rates anyway. That means we're all going to be fine anyway. And these other things are the moonshot sort of gravy element. Gravy, again, being a really helpful word for you. You know, I think that's for me, that's the right way to think about it. But clearly there was a problem, and that Bank of England GLD point for me would be the sweet spot to hit them on.
Do you think, I've written about this a couple of times in public posts over the last month or two, and I've called it a crisis of confidence, and it may be, and probably is, given, you know, my limited ability, you know, to understand all this stuff, but it might be too simple of an explanation to call it a crisis of confidence. But when I see, you know, what is still about a 1% spread between spot gold and the August contract, but it now a 3.5% spread between spot silver and the July contract. And I look at that and I think, well, why is that not being arbed? I mean, you would think if you had confidence in physical delivery, then you would buy at spot, sell the futures contract, deliver that metal you got from buying at spot, and capture that spread. I mean, it's easy money. It's a riskless trade as long as you have confidence that you're going to get the metal. So is that a gross I don't know. I don't know.
No, I don't think it is.
Okay.
No, I don't think it is really. I think that's fair. You know, all systems are confidence-based anyway, and the issue here is it's not just confidence-based, but it's upside down as well. Now, I think that in the case of silver, there's less knowledge out there about the logistics and the way in which the banks deliver to industrial users. And again, mm-hmm. even someone like me that's been looking at it for a very long time, I can't speak to you with great knowledge on this. But I don't know. I tend to think that what's going on COMEX, and whether this is to do with a new contract coming out and that one being avoided, you know, a while back, it looked like COMEX were preparing to do something, whether it's just declare force majeure, I don't know, but certainly the way they've been changing wording and categorization, all of this really speaks to the same point, which is, would it be a shock if COMEX shut and simultaneously the bullion bank business moved to a different venue but still within the bullion banking system, still dark, and whether it was slightly better or not, you still don't have the information. Do I think that could happen? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And do I think it means we go to $100 silver immediately? No. Unfortunately, it's silver. Silver will go because of flow into gold. Silver will do what it will do because it just can't handle it. It can't handle the capital coming into it. It's the same reason why it goes down a lot. And there may be a squeeze in physical, at which point then I don't know what happens. And that can... You know, clearly anybody that understands silver well knows that's one of the great things about silver, is it has this unpriced squeeze potential that you're not paying for, but is real.
Yeah.
And is 3% spread telling you that that's happening? I don't know, really. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I think it's difficult to say these things with conviction. The more it's that classic thing of the more you learn, the more you hold your opinion back, which is what I'm doing now. amazing.
As Paul Hewson, the great Irish philosopher, has said, the more you see, the less you know. So anyway, right. All right, let's use the back half of this conversation, my friend, really picking your expertise, though. I want to talk about not only the shares and where we are in this, beginning of a bull market, but let's start with what you mentioned earlier, and that's real rates, because you taught me this, and it is something you harp on. That the biggest driver of institutional demand, perhaps for gold in all its forms, is negative real interest rates, as it that makes the treasury bonds from the U.S. less attractive versus gold, and for a number of other reasons. Ned, by the time this is going to be posted, like I said, on the 3rd, on the 10th, we're going to get the next FOMC and press conference from Chief Goon Powell. Goon Williams mentioned just earlier this week that the Fed is actively considering rate caps, institution of ranges at least. I think if you look at the chart of the yield on the U.S. 10-year, I think they've already done it. But tell everybody in your own words about the impact and why negative real interest rates are such an important driver for gold.
Yeah, so I'm going to frame it similarly to how you did, but it's just a little bit different. So while you're right, because it's gold in all its forms, so it's the literal turnover of gold instruments daily, this is what matters. Where's the volume there? Where's the body of that? And the body of that is in the institutional world. We're talking about FX basically. Now, of course, futures and options is still important, and it tends to be more levered, so it can be a bit whippier. But the real thing, I think, the way I would explain it is this. Wherever you are, so whether you're in Kansas, whether you're in Stockholm, so you think in Swedish krona, whether you're in the UK and you think in pounds, with gold, you always have the choice to hold gold long. And what I mean by that is hold it for 5 to 10 years or hold your domestic cash instrument long. Now, the point about real rates here is this. If you hold your domestic cash instrument long, so leave aside treasuries for a minute. Let's think about just simply, money in the bank. It's still the same thing. You're holding it long. Now, if the market is discounting this and thinking, what will $100 in 10 years held in a laughable interest-bearing account. What will that buy me in goods and services relative to gold? Because that's the conversation. So while it's true that what you said on the institutional level about treasuries is a broader point, you know, people in India, they hold cash long by holding gold and not rupees. Now, the reason gold went down for 5 years, or rather we went through a bear market, is because the opposite is true, which is for 5 years, the Fed made cash expectations of the purchasing power of cash trend higher for 5 or 6 years by promising to unwind their balance sheet and raise rates. So that makes the bond market, the cash market, bullish about the purchasing power of dollars, and therefore the gold price won't do well. But it's always that, and it's this real rates point, this purchasing power point, whether it's in sterling, rupees, Norwegian krone, or anything else. And that's why I can show you real interest rate charts. So indices, which are, let's say, composites of AAA corporate bonds, net of rates and inflation 7 to 10 years out, both in sterling and in dollars. And in both cases, they perfectly mirror each other. That's because gold is the zero bound, the zero risk instrument of the system. And the cash market is always judging dollars held forward against gold. It's judging sterling held forwards against gold. And that's why they're the opposite of each other. And I do harp on about it, but I harp on about it because it's if you want to understand why the price is moving, it's the most important thing you need to understand.
And as you mentioned, I mean, positive rates, you had that kind of deflationary period and a strong dollar and all that kind of stuff from 2014 to 18. And now here we are with the opposite. And if the Fed does actually, even on a temporary basis, peg rates in a certain range, doesn't that almost kind of institutionalize a negative real interest rates?
Absolutely. And not only is that the case, but that was predicted to me by a very, very big bond fund manager that I happened to be chatting to. This was now about 15 months ago. So we were discussing real rates, and this lady was saying to me that she agreed with me that real rates were heading low and therefore gold was going to go higher. And she was very interested in this point about real rates and gold, considering putting it in a bond portfolio as well. And she said to me, what will happen is the peaking the curve. And she went into great detail about it and goes, all of this is unbelievably bullish for gold because it's a structural, like you just said, it's a structural move, and it's even a managed move. So it's the opposite of what we had before. Before we had the market being told that the purchasing power of a dollar would be at a minimum the same in 10 years and maybe even higher. And now they're battering you in the other direction to try and get you to circulate fiat money in the system. So it's a complete inversion, and it's why we're good to go now. I mean, you know, obviously pullbacks aside, and by the way, you could have a situation where short term, do you know what a tug of war is?
Yes.
So a tug of war is what goes on in real rates in gold. So we saw this go very badly for us in March. And the reason why is that the two teams on either end of the rope, you've got a financial system deflation on one side, which is the banking system. And it's basically just the banking system, effectively, on one side. And then you have, on the other end of it, central bank policymakers, but principally the Fed. So when you get collapsing forward inflation expectations, which is, of course, what happened in March, that's very positive for real rates. That means gold will go down, which it did, and silver will go down more. And that's all that is half of real rates moving heavily against you because of the collapse in forward rate expectations. But what we've got now, of course, is a different situation than we had in March, because in March the Fed weren't there. So you had one team pulling hard and no comment from the Fed. So we got smashed on that basis. But now the tug of war is very different. You've got two teams either end. And the reason why people like us think the Fed will win is because the Fed, you know, you call him Goon Powell, was that
yes.
it?
Yes, Chief.
So I at the moment I'm into the idea of calling him Agent Powell, because like in the Matrix, the thing about the central bank is they get to self-replicate. You know, they can just, you know, that bit in The Matrix where right. suddenly Agent Smith, they're like a trillion of them.
Right.
Well, you know, that's the prerogative of the central banker, which is why this tug of war now is not the same as it was in March, because in March they weren't there. You know, they stood there for 2.5 weeks going whistling, doing
right.
nothing.
Right, right.
And that's real rates play out as a tug of war between policymakers and the system. And gold's behavior and silver's behavior is a function, an inverse function of that. Now, that sounds quite complicated. It's not really. It's quite simple.
Yeah. Well, so we'll watch very closely that FOMC of June 9 and 10 and what Powell has to say. And if he's questioned on whether these rate caps are, and ranges have already kind of de facto been put in place. But like you said, Ned, all the shenanigans and the machinations of the banks and their exchanges, it's all fascinating, but we don't need that for the precious metals to go higher.
No, we don't. No.
Structurally, they're going higher anyway. So then that leads us to our last line of questioning, my friend. And that has to do with your day job as a gold and silver fund manager where you own mining shares. You know, we all kind of, you know, everybody's taught us, you know, whether it's Eric Sprott, Rick Rule, everybody that does this stuff for a living talks about bull markets. Both in the precious metals and the shares, kind of moving in stages where initially it's the large cap producers that take off because, as you know, as the price goes up $300, if you're making $100 an ounce at a certain price, all of a sudden you're making $300 an ounce. So your earnings have tripled. And we've seen that reflected in earnings reports. And obviously the GDX has done really well. And, you know, a lot of big cap miners have just been fantastic. But eventually then that begins to move toward the juniors. We're starting to see that maybe as reference to the GDXJ. And then eventually you get into the exploration companies that are all the rage because all of a sudden all these properties become economical. And so I guess we'll wrap up by just saying, okay, where do you think we are in this, Ned? What's the best way to kind of position as you look at your portfolio to kind of maximize returns here in the for the time being?
So ice trays, you pour ice into an ice tray and it generally, you don't pour water into all the holes at the same time. So asset allocation liquidity is your tap pouring into a tray of ice, you know, to make ice cubes. And the nearest ones to the tap are the largest. So Newmont and Barrick, I would argue with what you said there. I'm not sure that's quite right, actually. They it's not because they had $100 margins for about 4 times. That's not it. In fact, that's kind of quite a long way from the truth, which is they have quite big margins. Now, the margin growth is still good, but actually it's the fact they have large operating margins and they have huge scale. Therefore, the largest and first the first large sheep that go through the gate will graze on Barrick and Newmont all day long. That's just how it works.
Got it.
And then the next ice cube set of ice cubes down, we're already seeing some of that. But if it was a 9-inning game, to use your parlance, I would say that we are in the middle of the second innings of this, probably. You know, the first innings was literally just Barrick and Newmont moved, and Franco and
right.
You know, there are a few, but really they're just large, and it's like index reweighting and some early stage institutional money. But you know, I can tell you from our own experience, the fund that I run, that where we are right now is now we've got the thought leader sheep, you know, doing enhanced due diligence and very close to firing. Now, what that does is that makes the whole bloody pack start going, oh my God, they're all heading for the gate. And then we'll be into the guts of this, but we're not there yet. You know, we're still, we've gone past pure Barrick and Newmont now.
Mm-hmm.
And people are hunting opportunities, but you know, you and I know this will be the ultimate bubble and it will be mayhem at some point.
Yeah.
And it will be the ultimate bubble in both, as I always like to say, both meanings of the word ultimate. That's just what happens.
Best in your mind? I mean, you're an active manager, obviously, but is it still best in your mind just to not just, you know, go on standby and think that situations don't change? But is it more wise to aggressively manage your positions, or is it more wise just to do your homework?
I think that everybody's different. Everybody has their own risk profile. Everybody, people have their own knowledge levels. I'm going to say to you what I've always said to you when we have these conversations. I'll just repeat it. And it's important that I'm grateful you give me the opportunity to repeat myself, if I'm honest, which is however many stocks you own, it's not enough. What I mean is you don't own enough of them. You're not distributing your risk widely enough. If you own 10, that's too few, in mm-hmm. my opinion. Mm-hmm. You know, they have very high idiosyncratic risk, these mining equities, and your skew is not in your favor. You're more likely to end up lagging an index or a managed fund by 50 individual name than you are to outperform the index by 50 to 100% by holding it, in my opinion. So mm-hmm. I tend to think it's one asset class where actually, you know, you can be more indexing, and don't try to be a genius. It's not, it is very unlikely to work.
Right. Right. And as opposed to the day traders who think they are geniuses, when it's just simply the rising tide lifting all boats, you know, of Fed and other central bank liquidity, I'll ask you this and then we'll wrap up. I mean, what do you think of the idea? I call it the rule for Rick Rule, because he was the one that told me this first. He said, you know, we're currently at maybe 1% global asset allocation to the precious metal sector as a whole. We peaked at 8% in 1980 at the end of that madness period that you're alluding to is coming again. I mean, do you expect that kind of same thing too? Kind of that rising tide lifting all boats, so much cash coming in that it just goes?
It's one of my key, you know, angles for sell the fund at the moment. Is I don't know where he gets his 8% from. I tend to think he's, you know, I mean, it's a number.
Yeah.
It seems to make some sense. I think it's probably a little bit high, but it you know, ultimately yes, but it will be worse this time, because the reason why is this, the behavior is so much worse now. You know, the herding and the chasing, right, and the moronic drooling, and, you know, I mean, we don't live in 1980. You know, and not the 1980s were any kind of, you know, high point for human civilization. But it's, I mean, nowadays, you know, when this goes, it'll be absolutely mayhem. But the basic observation is right, and it's a very good one. It's one I use, which is, for example, in London, FTSE 100, FTSE 250. So if you're running a London-based equity fund, for example, selling into the, you know, the retail space, you have your investable universe. Not one single one of those managers owns any gold or silver exposure, mm-hmm. even though they have about somewhere between three and four percent of that available to them. So they're carrying on holding banks and you know, insurance companies and stuff in this market while these things are going straight up. Now that will change. You know, I don't care when they do it, when they don't do it, because they'll do it. It's just about when. Right. And so, yes, he's absolutely right. And I push that point hard to say, look, the fact that these people haven't done it yet is reason why you should be doing it now. In and of itself, that's a good enough sales angle.
Yeah.
The volume of capital and what that means is a profound observation for sure.
All right, Ned, it is time to let you go, because I know you got to go cook some dinner for those kiddos of yours. Have you decided what you're going to have tonight?
I haven't. I have a very nice grocer who's delivered me a couple of large boxes of produce, so okay. I will go and fiddle around and see what I can conjure up. And I'm very pleased with my son for not screaming during this slot. So
he's
been
very restrained.
Well, yes.
Well, what people need to understand is, besides being an internationally recognized man of mystery, Renaissance man, and fund manager, you're also a great cook and handle the cooking duties for the Ned Naylor Leyland family. So you better get at it.
I will. Look, lovely to speak to you. And next time I do get to play golf, I'll promise to put your ball properly in view on the camera, so I can pop that on the site.
He's talking about my TF Metals Report golf ball for all of you that are wondering what the hell he might be talking about. Yes. And if you need more, you let me know.
I will.
Right. Hey, my friend, thank you so much. This has just been invaluable. And I'm sure everybody listening has learned a lot. So thank you. Have a great rest of your day.
Terrific.
And
Take care.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll have another one, at least one more conversation for you tomorrow.